think about your own role in management and leadership, let's think about how you can make the future happen and how you can create conditions within your own profession that will favor real progress. Management can be defined many ways. Undoubtedly, you have your own definitions. One of the most widespread and commonly accepted definitions is management is getting things done through other people. This definition contains two primary elements. First, there's the focus on results. Management is getting things done. Second, there's getting things done through other people. Management is necessary because the manager can't accomplish things alone. Things get done through others. That's the way a manager or leader multiplies his or her own capabilities, dreams, and sense of direction. Allow me to introduce a more complex definition of management to start getting us into understanding the ways in which a man or woman can successfully carry out their management role. This definition says that management is a matter of doing activities and tasks using certain resources in order to achieve predetermined objectives. Let me take that definition a little slower. If you pick up any management textbook today, you'll find a remarkable unanimity between authors about the functions of management. Think of the word function as a primary headline. And underneath this headline, think of every activity, every specific task, everything that you do in management. Don't be intimidated by management terminology like semi-autonomous work teams, System 4, concatenation, LIFO, or operations research. Everything that is done in management can be listed under one of what I call the seven functions of management. These are the bones which make up the skeleton of everything that anyone ever does in management. And the seven functions are planning, organizing, staffing, which means the hiring and selection of good people, leading those people, communicating, making decisions, and controlling. It's sometimes helpful, particularly for the person who's new in management, to remember that every activity and task in management is carried out under one of these seven functional headings: planning, organizing, staffing, leading, communicating, decision-making, and controlling. In order to carry out those functions and tasks, we have to use certain resources, and these are commonly referred to as the seven resource M's. The seven M's constitute the resource base with which you have to operate. The first, if you'll permit the generic use of the word, is manpower, meaning the devoted, dedicated talents of men and women. Second, the money that is available in your insufficient budget. Third, there's the machines or the technology that's available. The fourth M is the methods or procedures, the ways of doing things that are available. Then there's the materials, the specific hard stuff with which you manufacture goods or use to provide a service. One of the most important M's is minutes. Time itself is a resource. There's only so much of it. And lastly, mission. To repeat, the seven M's are manpower, money, machines, methods, materials, minutes, and mission. In a survey of top executives, those who can look down over the organization as a whole and see the sum total of what's going on, there tends to be a general pattern of thinking that of all the resources, the most important is that of manpower. Andrew Carnegie came to the United States as a poor immigrant. He shined shoes on the street corners of New York City, slept in the alleyways, and from that very humble beginning created the great steel empire and became a great leader of industry. In later life, he was questioned by an interviewer who said, "Seems to me, Mr. Carnegie, that the secret to your success is in the fact that you amassed all this money at a very critical time. Money makes money. It's like a snowball that runs downhill. Seems to me that the secret to great financial success is simply being able to accrue enough money at the beginning, and that financial management is where it's at." Andrew Carnegie looked at his questioner and said, "You just don't understand it, do you? You could take away all my factories, you could take away all the money, you could take away all our ways of doing things, take away everything that I possess, but leave me my people. And in 5 years, I'll have everything I've ever had, and more besides. Carnegie understood this great secret of management. It's the people who use and accrue money. It's the people who'll invent the better machinery. The methods stem only from the brain power of people. Materials are used by the people. The minutes we've talked about are the minutes of the people on your payroll. And the mission can exist only within the heads and hearts of people. In the foreword to one major corporation's management manual is this interesting and insightful statement. All organizations are comprised of three elements. They have physical plant and machinery, they have market opportunity, and they have people. Only in its human organization can a company be unique. Or consider this statement from Akio Morita, the chairman and founder of Sony. When asked what the biggest failing of American management was that explained why Japanese organizations have been able to assert industry dominance, he replied, "The biggest failure of American management is that they fail to realize that their prime competitive advantage is their people." What is your organization's prime competitive advantage? Is it a current patent or some new technology? Or is it your people? As we consider the various resource M's, manpower generally is thought by most key executives to be the most important. For some managers, that's where the definition of management ends. It's carrying out a lot of activities and tasks under the seven functions, the seven F's, and it's spending a lot of the company's resources, the seven M's. For many managers, that's where the day begins, that's where the day ends. They come to the job site, they suck up the company benefits, they do a lot of busy work, they empty their in basket. Who cares? So what? What happens? Well, there's a bottom line, another element to the management definition, a focal point often forgotten by those who don't win the management game. Management is a distinct process of functional behavior using resources to achieve certain predetermined objectives. It's to get things done that we go through the work and that we use the resources. Those predetermined objectives fall into seven areas known as the key results areas, or KRAs. When one thinks about what is truly important in management, it's not just getting work done. What's important is getting key results. These key result areas are, first, customer needs. What does the customer need? Find that need, determine how to meet that need, and the world is yours. The second KRA is economics. What can you do in your job that will affect sales? What can you do to control expenses? What can you do to maximize the difference between those two? And that difference is called profit. Even if you're in a non-profit organization, the word profit is a holy word. It is a sacred value, because profit represents your ability to purchase tomorrow. The third KRA is quality. Quality is what sells your product. Quality is what brings people back for the service. Is it worth what they paid for it? Quality is not something to treat lightly. If your product, if your service, is not better and more reliable than the competition's, then your organization won't have a future. It will join the list of organizations dying to the left and the right of us even as we speak. A fourth key result area is productivity. What can you do to increase the output of your organizational unit or of your organization as a whole with the resources that you have? You'll never have all the resources that you'd like or even need. So how can you increase the ratio of output given the limited input that you're able to provide? A fifth key result area is innovation. You can't expect to manage tomorrow by doing today what you did yesterday. If you're not creating the future by finding new ideas, if you're not pumping your people for every new idea that they've got, you're not working sufficiently in this key result area, and your future will be jeopardized. Whatever you've done with great excellence in the past, I congratulate you for. But what new ideas have you created lately? The sixth key result area is people growth. Of all your assets, only people have the possibility of growing and appreciating in value. All the rest of your resources, as we said, are depreciating. What can you do as a leader that will help these people grow? How can you make them more confident in their decision-making? Our focus has to be on the development of talent and on the ability of people to serve and to take risks. The final key result area to focus on is organization climate improvement. What can you do to increase the development and interaction in your organization as a whole? Every organization has a climate. Every organization has an atmosphere. Some places are great places to work. A book entitled The 100 Best Companies to Work For in America was an instant success. People want to work for Disney and IBM and Hewlett-Packard and Johnson & Johnson and 3M. These companies don't have recruiting problems, and they don't have retention problems either. Something has happened in terms of excellent organization climate that nurtures and motivates and challenges the human spirit. But in other organizations, people are defensive. They don't share information. They backstab. The climate is so unhealthy and psychologically ill that there's little probability of that organization succeeding in a competitive environment. Let me say all this more simply. Management is a success game. Management is concerned with winning. Someone once said to Vince Lombardi, "Coach, it seems to me that you put too much emphasis on winning. There's entirely too much emphasis on winning at all costs." And I've heard it said that it doesn't matter whether you win or lose. It's how you play the game. And to that, Lombardi responded, "If it doesn't matter whether you win or lose, why do they keep score? Show me a good loser," he said, "and I'll show you a loser." Management is concerned with winning. We do what we do in management only because we want to win, to achieve. Whatever the game played in your organization, whatever winning means to your organization, management is the key power tool to help you do it. Management isn't a dry subject. Management is a set of power levers, power tools, that can help you change the world around you. As we moved into our executive careers, most of us experienced what is known as the transition problem, the trauma of transition. This was the period of our career life when we moved from being a professional or a technician in whatever specialty we were originally trained into a new specialty, the specialty of management. Being given a title didn't necessarily make you a true manager. Just how is it that a person moves from the realm of technical specialty into the realm of professional management? Return with me to those thrilling days of yesteryear, and let's think about what it was like as we moved from specialty of technical performance into the specialty of management performance. Did you notice, for example, that after your appointment, you walked into the cafeteria, and the people with whom you had previously been associated seemed to grow quiet at your approach? Did you notice your grapevine contacts dried up? Did you notice that people seemed to be a little more careful in choosing their words as they spoke to you? Did you notice that the free and easy camaraderie of the subordinate team now seemed to be more strained as you joined the management team? Did you notice that managers didn't seem to give information quite as freely? Did you note that people seemed to be a little more uptight, a little more political? And if you were smart, you downplayed your new titles. If you noticed these changes, you noticed one of the problems of moving across the bridge of managing commitment from a subordinate culture into a management culture. A culture is a group of people that have a common set of values, behaviors, expectations. Sometimes the management culture is not as fun as the subordinate culture. Often in a truly great organization, it's not only just as fun, it's even more fun, because that's where the action is. Managers have a good time in McDonald's, where the organization even has a vice president of fun. A sense of celebration, of having the fun of achievement, is vital to turning people on. Are people having a good time in your place? One of the other things that you are moving from is the past. Whatever the past personally, whatever the past professionally, you're now moving into your future. You're moving into the future of your career and your technology and your specialty area. In fact, one of your jobs in management is to create that new future and the new ways of doing things. One of the things that you are moving from is following the book. In the past, you were told, here's the policy manual. Do it the way we say. Fill the form out in triplicate. Dot the I's. Cross the T's. You were told to be a good little soldier. Now you're moving across the bridge into an area where things are not written down nice and neat. One of the things you discover as you move into this Alice in Wonderland world that we call management is that you're being asked to write new chapters in the book. Often the answers are not fully spelled out. Instead of having the luxury of simply doing what others tell you, now you must take the responsibility for creating new solutions. Before your transition, the job was spelled out with specific tasks and responsibilities, all neatly laid out in a job description. You came in at 8, you left at 5, you were paid for your hours and for your work. But as you crossed that bridge into the realm of management, you found that nobody really cared anymore how many hours you worked. It was just a given that you'd probably have to work more. And people could care less how early you had to come in, how late you had to stay, or what you put in your briefcase as you took it home and destroyed your weekend, because now you're being paid for results, not for hours. The management job was not written down nice and neat, even though you may have had a laughable job description. There was a lot of ambiguity, and with that ambiguity came a lot of anxiety, and you may have noticed that you're popping a lot more Tums these days than you used to. Where you stood as a technician or as a newly appointed supervisor, there was safety. There was the ability to follow the herd. But as you moved across that bridge into management ranks, you found that there was no way you could hide in the herd anymore. For in that realm, there is risk and there is exposure. By the quality of your ideas and your ability to make decisions, do you stand or fall? How can one feel comfortable not working by the book? Unfortunately, the bridge of transition to the land of professional management has no handrail. There is, in fact, a chance that you will fall off the bridge. About one-third of the people who move into management work won't make it across the bridge. They won't be able to cut it. They will either violate the new management culture, fail to get results, or become a political liability. They'll be unhappy in their new job. They'll develop health problems. They'll show stress symptoms. Their marriages may fall apart. They'll tend to stay away from the office or show other hiding behaviors. I do not make these comments in a critical way, and I can't help feeling sorry for these people who probably should not have been selected for management work. A management job is not a job that is easily undertaken. It is not the great be-all and end-all. The person who says, "I don't want a career in management," is a healthy individual who knows that success and achievement in life can come from many sources. I'm assuming as I talk with you that you're interested in being successful in that leadership role. And if you are, let me discuss briefly three of the most common reasons that people fail to get across the bridge. The first of these is that new people in management sometimes fail to learn their craft. They don't really learn the job of management. They don't study the books. They don't understudy the performance of older men and women who have been successful in crossing the bridge. A number of years ago, Richard Chamberlain was famous for his roles on several TV series. He was a fine television actor. One night in London, he went to see Sir Laurence Olivier playing Othello. For 3 hours, this great actor virtually held the entire audience in the palm of his hand. Olivier told the story with great emotion of a man who had it all and who lost it all. It is a great tragedy, a great story, and it is one that requires unbelievable talent to tell. There are no second chances on the live stage. There is no editor to kindly cut out your mistakes as there is in TV. Richard Chamberlain left the theater shaken because he realized that he had not learned his craft. So out of his own pocket, he paid his own way and for 2 years studied in England at the Royal Shakespearean Company, learning how the pros do it. For 2 years, he devoted himself to the study of his craft. He took 2 years out of what would have been a very lucrative earning period for him. And finally, he came back to New York and played Hamlet. The New York theater critics, who are not always kind, said that it was one of the finest performances of Hamlet in this century. Richard Chamberlain had paid the price to learn his craft. Now, my question to you is, have you learned the craft of management? Don't be like some and make the mistake of thinking that because they gave you a title, that's all it's going to take. One simple way to learn your craft is to map out a development plan. On a sheet of paper, draw 3 columns. Label the first development needs and identify 3 things that need enhancement in your performance. If you can't think of three things, ask your boss. Label the second column, prescriptive actions, and identify three things you will do for each of the three development needs. A prescriptive action might be listening to my other wonderful tape programs, or reading a book, going to a seminar, getting coaching from a pro you admire, anything that will strengthen your ability in that area. And label the third column, schedule, and write down when you will do each of these prescriptive actions. Repeat this process each year. Believe me, it's a mistake to wait around for your organization to take care of your career. It's something you must do for yourself. One of the most respected executives in America is Lee Iacocca. Lee's development plan for years has been to scan read a management book every day. Would it make a difference to your career if you had read 365 management books last year? Perhaps that's overdone, but tell me, did you read one last year? Now, there are those who learn their craft and yet still fail. They encounter the second transition failure, that of not doing their homework. That is, they don't practice the skills that intellectually they know. It's a sad fact that many people in management can quote you all of the management writers and yet do none of what is recommended by those writers. They are great people who can espouse the concepts of transactional analysis, but who are insensitive in their human dealings. There are many people who've read all the time management books and yet are so disorganized they can't get themselves to work on time. In the early 1960s, a young pianist from Texas, Van Cliburn, went to Moscow to enter the prestigious Tchaikovsky competition. The Tchaikovsky competition is the world series of classical piano. In Europe and in Russia, those who play classical piano are great national heroes. Coming from a small town in Texas, Van Cliburn's chances against these heavy hitters didn't look like much, but he walked away with the grand prize. It was one of the great artistic accomplishments for an American. He came back to this country to ticker tape parades in New York City. Shortly after his return, a woman came up to him following a concert performance and said, "Mr. Van Cliburn, I'd give 20 years of my life to be able to play like that." He looked at her and said, "Madam, that is exactly what I have given. The amount of practice, practice, practice that is required in order to make the knowledge of craft come out of the fingertips is immense. Benny Goodman, in his 80s, still got up every morning and played the scales for 3 hours. And I'm wondering, have you sharpened and honed your knowledge of management? Have you set out every day some kind of an objective that you intend to hit in terms of improving your capabilities?" Effective managers routinely identify 1, 2, or 3 major tasks they intend to accomplish each day. As they drive into the parking lot in the morning, they think through what item or items of significance they'll attack that day. Don't let there be a work myopia, a managerial drift in your job. The final failure area is the failure to continually develop oneself. After having attained, some managers reach a sort of comfort zone where they stop the developmental process. A few years ago, a very popular book, The Peter Principle, suggested that people are promoted to their level of incompetence. My observation is contrary to that. I don't believe that upper-level executives are so stupid that they take people with insufficient talent and put them in jobs where they fail. They didn't get to be top executives by being unable to read people effectively. But what I do sometimes see are managers who reach a comfort zone where they have mastered the job, but then fail to keep up with that job as it develops through time. Think about what's happening in your own career field and how much more complex it has become in the last 5 years. Think about the new technology that is occurring, that's encroaching into it. Think about the new tools. Think about the new methods. Some managers study like crazy in order to keep up with it, and others are going to sleep at the switch. It is their failure to develop themselves that leaves them vulnerable. Those of you listening to this program are making an attempt to continue your own professional development. And so, of course, this comment is strictly for your competition and not for you. But enough of those failure factors. Let's consider another major focus of success in management. Perhaps we can be guided in our thinking by this quotation from Thoreau. "It is not enough to be busy," he wrote. "So too are the ants. The question is, what are we busy about?" For many managers, the job is one of frantic activity, rushing to and fro. They are busy, busy, busy from morning until night, and yet how much do they actually accomplish? One of the sad facts about many managers who fail is that while they may work hard and put in a lot of hours, they contribute little. Remember, it is not enough to be busy. The question is, what are we busy about? Every manager must make a strategic choice in terms of how they're going to approach their job. The word strategy is an ancient Greek word, a title given to a general, a strategist. You are the general in the field. You must make a strategic choice between doing your job in a way that will produce results, which is our key understanding of what management is all about, or of doing the job in other ways that have little to do with affecting the outcome and the quality of the day. I'd like to suggest two lists of words that will define the difference between the poles of this choice. First, a list that describes the losers in management. These are men and women who do not accomplish anything. These are people who approach their job on a basis of efficiency, of doing a lot of little things with great neatness. These are people who are policy-focused, doing things right-focused. These are people who are always reacting to crisis. These are people who are concerned with urgent needs and are always rushing about in fevered activity at so many managerial miles per hour. They are busy continually, and yet they seem to accomplish little or nothing. These are the losers in management. The winners are those men and women who are effectiveness-focused. By effectiveness, we mean that this is a person who is concerned more with doing the right things than they are concerned with doing things right. Now, we're not saying that doing things right is not an important value to have within your organization. But we are saying that doing things right is subordinate work. The secretary should be focused on doing things right. You as a manager must be focused on doing the right things. And what are those right things? They are the key results areas, the KRAs we've already talked about. Rather than rushing to and fro, fighting all the fires, instead of reacting to every new crisis, instead of being a person who is emergency-oriented, I'm asking that you be fire-preventing. Think about the last 3 or 4 emergency situations that arose in your department. Did you rush out to fight those fires yourself? Or had you previously trained subordinates and told them it's their problem to take care of? Did you then go back to your office, shut the door, and work out that new policy or procedure or training program that would prevent that same kind of fire from recurring? If you did, you put yourself on the side of effectiveness in performance management. It's not busyness that we're after, you see. It's business. Getting business done and achieving results is infinitely more important than mere activity.